Hey everybody, it's J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Got a very special episode of the podcast today. This is not a Bucks-centric episode. I know we've got a lot to talk about. We've got to talk about the All-Star game. That dunk that Giannis threw down off the bounce pass from Steph Curry that sent shockwaves through the sports world on Sunday. We're going to talk about that with Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter. We're just not going to do it today. We're going to wait a little bit and catch up with him. We'll get a couple games. The Bucks are back in action Thursday, of course, Thursday night at Fiserv Forum against the Boston Celtics. So we'll let a little more game action go by before we return to the Bucks chatter. This is a special podcast involving the Wisconsin Badgers. We're getting closer to March Madness, and I had a chance to chat with some members of the 1999-2000 Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team that went to the Final Four, went on a crazy run to the Final Four, and I had an opportunity to chat with Coach Dick Bennett and a lot of the guys who were part of the team, Mike Kelly, Mark Vershaw, John Bryant, a few more guys. So I wanted to bring that to you, this special episode. It's over at the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel feed. Check that out if you do not already subscribe to that. That's a little less regular than the Bucks content, but we still come at you and will be coming at you on a more regular basis with the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament right around the corner with Badgers beat reporter Jeff Patricus. So again, you can find that just as you may have found this one on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Subscribe to that one, rate us, review us, the same spiel. If you like Badgers content, that is the place to go. One last reminder before we get into this special podcast, there's still time. If you're listening to this on Thursday, when it arrived, there is still time to get the special Journal Sentinel President's Day sale deal. If you go to jsonline.com/deal, you'll get this limited time offer, digital access to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. $1 will get you 3 months of subscription. That's a savings of 97%. That's insanity. And you should definitely give that a look if you do not already subscribe to the Journal Sentinel. Hey, the Bucks, guys, they're going to the playoffs, and they're probably going to be, if not the number one seed, a top three seed in the Eastern Conference, and certainly everyone hopes for that top seed overall. They are the best team in the NBA coming into the All-Star break, and they are going to be, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of fun stuff ahead. So you're going to want to be following Matt Velasquez. He is the best at covering the Milwaukee Bucks. You're going to want all of his coverage, and heck, some of mine too. I've got a lot of fun stuff in there. It's not just Badgers or Bucks related. It's also Brewers related, and maybe even some Packers, Marquette, other stuff as well. So please, jsonline.com/deal. Get that President's Day sale while it's still there. There's some print subscription offers for you as well, and I strongly encourage you to check that out. In the meantime, if Bucks are your flavor, you can, you know, move on, skip this one, and come back next week when Matt Velasquez and I reconvene. But if you are a Badgers fan, you got to give this a listen. Had a lot of fun talking about the 1999-2000 Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team.
Maynard. Inside Smith. He's got to take it straight away. It's a brick. Loose ball. Lewis, and that's it! After 59 years, the Badgers are headed back to the Final Four!
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and today we're taking a pretty in-depth look back at the 1999-2000 Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team. It's a team that almost a couple decades ago now shocked just about everybody when they went all the way to the NCAA tournament's Final Four as an eighth seed. Coached by Dick Bennett, went 22-14 in the regular season, 8-8 in the Big Ten, and nonetheless won on a magical run, applying incredible defense. They did not have a lot of stars on the team. In fact, they had no all-conference players, no first-teamers, no second-teamers, no third-teamers, not even an honorable mention all-conference pick. And they were able to get all the way to the final stage of the NCAA tournament before falling in the national semifinal to Michigan State. How is it that that's possible? How is it that a team with no all-conference players is able to get all the way to the Final Four? That's what I wanted to find out. And I did that by talking to several players on the team and to the coach, Dick Bennett, who was in his fifth season with the team at the time. he actually had already led a turnaround at a couple other stops in Wisconsin college basketball coaching. He had been at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. He had been at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, where, of course, his son Tony Bennett played for him and then went on to be an assistant under his dad and is now, of course, the head coach at Virginia, one of the top programs in the nation in the ACC and routinely one of the top five programs in the nation. But at the time, Tony and Dick were working together with this Badgers team. And he ended up in his fifth season leading them in on this crazy tournament run. They beat Fresno State in the first round in an 8-9 matchup, wound up, of course, upsetting top-seeded Arizona, went on to beat fourth-seeded LSU, Purdue in the Elite Eight, a big-time Big Ten foe, and then facing off with Michigan State, team that ended up beating the Badgers and going on to win the national championship. Now, the Badgers that year, they needed three wins really in the final three games of the season to sort of get this crack, to get to 500 in the Big Ten. And so it was a late season push. They won two games in the Big Ten tournament, including over Purdue, a team that they would see in the Elite Eight, before falling to Michigan State. This is a recurring theme. You're going to hear Michigan State come up a lot on this podcast. In these interviews, there were four occasions when the Badgers faced Michigan State in 1999, 2000, and the Spartans, again, the national champions, so no slouch, won all four of those games. It had been 59 years since the Badgers were previously in a Final Four. That was all the way back in 1941. But and this team didn't necessarily look like they were going to be the one to break that streak, although they did hold teams to an average of 55.8 points per game, a pretty impressive defense, and they had been battle-tested. They had the number one schedule in the country, according to Sagarin ratings after the season, number five in the RPI, so they had certainly played high-level competition. The Big Ten was very good that year, and so it makes sense that they would be a team that could sneak up on some people, and certainly they did that in the postseason. But again, a team with zero all-conference players, and they were able to get all the way to the Final Four. How is that possible? We will let the players and the coach, Dick Bennett, tell you for themselves. Let's start with the West Regional Most Outstanding Player in 2000, sharpshooter John Bryant.
So, John Bryant, I'm 42 years old, live in the Minneapolis area, and I'm an investment advisor and also a high school basketball coach. We were used to playing very good teams, and we knew that. Our thing was we just needed to get in. We needed to find a way to grind it out and make the NCAA tournament. And we had a big win down the stretch against Indiana at home. Dwayne kind of took the game over and really helped us get over the top, where we felt that game would get us into the NCAA tournament, but we weren't, you know, we knew that we probably needed to win one or two in the Big Ten tournament.
This is Mark Vershaw. I am 39. I'm from Illinois, and last couple of years I've made a transition from, I've been coaching in the college level, but last couple of years we made a transition to being a high school history teacher, and currently right now we just made a move to Northern Virginia. With six games left in that season, we switched our offense, and I can remember vividly because we went to the University of Iowa. It was our first game, and it was an opportunity for me to get to go from all over the floor, kind of in a mover role. Always been in the blocker role, so I was very adamant to make that offense look good. And I got into foul trouble in that first half, and I thought that was the end of our offense. But then in the second half, we came out and put on one of the most remarkable defensive efforts in that first 7 or 10 minutes, if I recall right. And then, but our offense it was clicking. And from that point on, I think we won four out of our last six. And if my memory serves, the only team we lost to from that point on to the end of the year was Michigan State. And unfortunately, we lost to them four times in that stretch.
This is Maurice Linton, former Badger, current Badger alum. I'm currently living in the greater Atlanta area. I am in retail, currently running a store for Total Wine and More. I do remember there was a big importance on that Indiana game, and we were a bubble team, so to speak, or, you know, something like that. I drove a few people insane on the coaching staff with me always trying to have fun all the time. But I do remember us going out and saying, hey, let's have fun, let's play hard, and you know, let the chips fall where they may. And it was intense. However, at least from my standpoint, it was a bit of a relaxed game. And like you said, I was able to have at least one good game that season. And it was cool that it was a game that had a little weight to it. We lost to Michigan State for the third time that year in the tournament. They ended our Big Ten tournament championship hopes. They were a great team. And I can't recall if we watched it on a bus ride back to Madison or if we watched it in a hotel. I can't recall. The feeling wasn't that we were a long shot by any stretch, but you know, we were right there dead smack in the middle and you know, on the bubble. And when they announced that we made it, there was some excitement in the room. It wasn't like news camera worthy or anything like that, but there was some excitement, you know, understanding where we were going and who was in our tournament. I mean, who was in our bracket.
We felt pretty good about where we were. We knew we had played a really tough schedule. There wasn't really a team in the nation that we were that scared of because we had played Michigan State, you know, three times if you include the Big Ten tournament. So much of it depends on your draw and how you match up against the teams that you're going to be playing in the tournament. And we felt that the teams that were in our side of the bracket, we matched up well against.
The battle with Fresno State is easily the least remembered of the four victories that the Badgers had in the NCAA tournament in 2000. That should not fool you. This team had four players who at least got a chance in the NBA, led by Courtney Alexander, who had averaged pretty close to 25 points per game that season. And they had a nice resume. They won the Western Athletic Conference tournament over Tulsa. Tulsa was a team coached at the time by Bill Self, who is now the head coach at Kansas, one of the premier three or four programs in the NCAA. And they'd beaten Tulsa three times that year. Tulsa, nonetheless, was nationally ranked for most of the season. And Fresno State had gotten them twice in the regular season and then again in the conference tournament final. And Fresno State was leading this game at halftime in the opening round, this 8-9 matchup, with the Badgers being the 8th seed, Fresno the 9. But Wisconsin opened up the second half on a 23-2 run. John Bryant hit 7 three-pointers in the game, finished with 21 points entirely thanks to his sharp shooting, and the Badgers prevailed 66-56. And the Badgers were still thinking about another game, the game that happened the year before in the NCAA tournament when they had taken an ugly loss as a 5 seed to Southwest Missouri State and scored just 32 points. I asked John Bryant a little bit about the win over Fresno State and his performance, but before we get to him, here's a guy that you might know.
I'm Dick Bennett, retired basketball coach, and I live in central Wisconsin and have for the last 10 years. The year before was, even though we made the NCAA, was a low point. We were so poor in that game against Southwest Missouri, and it just kind of highlighted what everybody hated about our style. And I can remember thinking, oh, please, Lord, don't let this happen again.
Fresno State was kind of undisciplined. They were very athletic, but we knew that we could really kind of grind them out and make them play our style. The one thing in the back of our mind was the year before, and that debacle against Southwest Missouri State where I think we scored 32 points or something.
And they zoned us. Fresno State did. Jerry Tarkanian was not known for his zone, so that was a bit of a surprise. But they either didn't know what a shooter John Bryant was, or they just decided to leave him alone.
Everyone makes a big deal about that game for me personally, the fact that I made 7 three-pointers, but it was basically like being in the gym alone in a sense. They ran this bad 2-3 zone, and all our guys just tried to get me the ball or our shooters the ball in spots where, you know, we could be successful, and those shots were really wide open.
All right, this is Mike Kelly. I am working in Hustisford, Wisconsin, living in Menominee Falls, currently coaching as well as coaching youth basketball and working here in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was like the worst 2-3 zone you've ever seen, and I would literally stand at the top of the key and like pass fake to the right wing and then pass it back to the left wing, and he would shoot a three. There was no design, there was no play, but because he hit, you know, 6 threes or whatever he did in that game, I think, you know, a shooter sees the ball go through the hoop, you feel good about it, and the next game you play with a little more confidence, and away we went, kind of. There was no sense of we're better than people realize, and we're going to show everybody how good we are. If anything, it was more of a,
playing out of fear, because the prior year we got embarrassed. I mean, we scored 32 points only. I think we had hit a three-pointer towards the end of the game just to get into the 30s. And that was as a 5 seed, I believe. It was one of those 5-12 matchups. So we were all petrified of laying an egg one more time on a national stage. And so we got that monkey off our back, and we got a win, and now we're playing a 1 seed, and you feel like you're playing on house money a little bit.
They took that house money into a battle with Arizona, the number 1 seed in the region. Wildcats, several players who ended up in the NBA. Luke Walton, Richard Jefferson, Gilbert Arenas, Lauren Woods, and heck, their leading scorer was Michael Wright. But was Arizona, despite having all that firepower, they led at one point, they led 2-0, and that was the last time they had a lead. Wisconsin wound up winning the game going away. Andy Kowski had a double-double, his second of the tournament. Maurice Linton scored 9 of his team's final 13 points. And Michael Wright was held to 2 points on just 4 shot attempts. Again, that's the team's leading scorer. And they were the Pac-10 champion that year, Arizona was, but it was the Badgers who dominated. 66-59 winners in Salt Lake City. Here's Mike Kelly about that win, followed by Maurice Linton.
We got a huge break. They had a 7-footer, Lauren Woods, who was, I think, a lottery pick. Yeah, that hurt his back at some point late in that season. And so they still got a 1 seed, but they were playing without him. And that was huge. I mean, he was a good player. He didn't go on to dominate the NBA or anything like that, but he was very good. So I think they were trying to deal with that, which helped out. They had, Gilbert Arenas was there, and Luke Walton was there, and Richard Jefferson was there. So they had NBA players, but they didn't have their big men. So that helped us quite a bit. And then I think, the combination of playing a little bit looser because you're the 8 seed and they're the 1 and the pressure's on them, I think helped us. And then I think we were just tougher. If I'm being totally honest, I think they thought they could just roll the ball out and they were going to beat us.
We knew we had, a team that wasn't full go because of what Lauren Woods was injured that game, I think. They still had Luke Walton. They still had Richard Jefferson. They still had Arenas. And now that I think about it, holy cow, that team was stacked.
In that game, in many of the following games, we were able to return to our most comfortable, mental state. That was as underdogs, and we were a very dangerous out as an underdog, and I think the pressure was relieved in winning that first one, and we knew we had a challenge, but we were comfortable, and we could, we could face that opponent, whom we discovered kind of along the way, not from Lute Olson, but we didn't think they respected us, and it wasn't a planted seed. It was something that we sensed from the media, perhaps even some of the things that were said, that it kind of just fed the fire.
My name is Andy Kowski, and I was a power forward on the 2000 Final Four team with the Wisconsin Badgers. I'm from Brookfield, Wisconsin, originally. Now I live in New Berlin. I am 40 years old now, yikes, and I am a civil engineer at a consulting firm in the Milwaukee area. We really frustrated them. They were young. They hadn't seen anything like that the whole season. Gilbert Arenas was their leading scorer, and, Mike guarded him and shut him down, and we just frustrated them. There was a point in the second half where I think it was when we were shooting a free throw, and Gilbert Arenas was just chewing out his teammates. Guys are for real. We've got to play, and that's when we knew we had them.
Gilbert Arenas, with about 6 or 7 minutes to go, there was a free throw being shot. And it was clear that we were legit. I mean, we had the lead at the time. And he was yelling to his teammates. Not yelling. It was more like a whine of, like, come on, guys. This is Wisconsin. Let's go. And it sort of, I thought, opened his mind up a little bit to how he viewed us. Like they could just turn it on at that point because we were just Wisconsin. And, of course, it was too late by that point.
Wisconsin went back out west, this time to Albuquerque, to face 4th-seeded LSU in the Sweet 16. LSU, a lot of people thought, was an even tougher matchup than Arizona. They were ranked 10th in the nation. and they had won the SEC West, the Southeast Conference Western Division Championship. They were led by a couple post players, Stromile Swift and Jabari Smith, who between them averaged 28 points and 15 rebounds a game. Both guys played in the NBA, but in this game, LSU only had 14 points at halftime. The Badgers employed a post trap to keep both guys completely in check. At one point in the second half, the Badgers had a 36-18 lead. John Bryant finished with another 16 points. Mike Kelly had 5 steals, and it was yet another convincing victory for the Wisconsin Badgers. The 8th-seeded Badgers were on to the Elite Eight with a 61-48 victory over LSU. Here's Andy Kowski about that game, followed by John Bryant.
I think they beat a pretty good Texas team to get to the Sweet 16, and I remember we were watching some of that game because they were playing before us in Utah, and you know, Stromile Swift is just dunking on everybody. He's looking really good. I think, you know, the next year he was a lottery pick, and it just, they were just a heavy favorite. I think that you know, people looked at that Arizona game as okay, as a bunch of juniors and seniors that beat up on some younger guys, but now they're facing a hot, big, strong, fast, athletic LSU team, and so we were big underdogs again. I don't think they respected us. You know, Mike and I, Mike probably told you the story at the presser. You know, we reached out to say what's up to and Stromile. They basically mean mugged us, gave us a cold shoulder, and we were like, okay, that's how it is. I see how you're playing this. And then we kicked their butt on the basketball floor. And again, it was our defense. Maybe the biggest win on paper was the Arizona game. I think our best defensive performance was the LSU game. We were pretty good against Arizona as well defensively, but I think the LSU game, you know, they didn't probably take us seriously, and we really surprised them with our, you know, defensive ability and our pressure and ability to take away the paint.
I mean, you can see that what Virginia does in the ACC with the quality of post players that they have. That post trap, if you don't see it, it's hard to go up against. And going up against it in practice, and then, you know, seeing teams that aren't accustomed to it or used to it, it does affect post players. So generally, in my career, I think there wasn't as many post players that did damage. The guys that did damage against our defense were the small forward types that had the length. You think of Michael Redd and Mo Peterson. Those are the kind of players that hurt us. And post players with the trap, we were able to be successful against. So in that game, some of their strengths kind of played to the strengths of our defense.
They clearly underestimated our ability to trap them and kind of neutralize their strength. In looking at them, and they ran, you know, kind of an offense, we thought we would be close enough to trap either, and that would really make them scramble to find ways to score. I didn't think it would work quite as well as it did. And it's a good thing it did, because we weren't exactly a juggernaut offensively in that game, particularly in the first half. It worked beautifully and, you know, again, gave us that understanding that this is our formula. We have what others might perceive as being boring and ugly. This is who we are. And if we're to play it to the hilt, who knows what might happen. Purdue.
Gus, I tell you, I don't know that I've ever seen a defensive effort like this tonight. The only word that I can use to describe it is unbelievable. And if they play defense like that, they can beat anybody in the country. The issue for Wisconsin is whether they can score consistently enough to complement that defense. And in the second half, Dick Bennett's squad came out and shot the ball very well early, jumped out to the lead, and then they've been able to hang on.
There they are, the Wisconsin Badgers. Inbound it, and they are heading into the Elite Eight. Tremendous game plan by Dick Bennett, the head coach at Wisconsin, and they win it 61-48.
I thought we had 3 really great matchups for us, from Fresno State being soft and Arizona being soft and LSU being all tissue paper soft. We finally had a team that was every bit as tough as us and knew exactly what we were going to do. And no, we didn't. There was nothing we could change. We weren't the type of team that did game plan differently game to game. So we knew what we were going to do, and they knew what we were going to do, and vice versa. And I thought, shoot,
you know, any other team than this would have been better because it was going to be a fight.
So improbably, the Wisconsin Badgers are one step away from the Final Four, but now they got to face a Purdue team that knew Wisconsin awfully well. They had met three times that season. Wisconsin won two of the three meetings. They split in the regular season and won a Big Ten tournament game, the Badgers did. So Wisconsin wasn't really the underdog anymore. And in this game, the two teams played very evenly matched. They swapped leads eight times, but John Bryant hit another 5 3-pointers. Wisconsin held a 60-53 lead with 1:08 to play. And even though Purdue kind of kept it close, the Badgers were able to pull away for a 64-60 win over Gene Katie and the Purdue Boilermakers. Here to talk about it is Dick Bennett, whose famous speech before the game is something that many players remember. He'll be followed by Andy Kowski and then Mike Kelly with a couple pretty good stories. One involving an NCAA tournament bracket and one involving a folding table in Albuquerque.
You know, when I started there in 95, I think we used the thought of begin the dream, you know, dream. And we've kind of followed that loose symbolic approach or allegoric, whatever you want to call it, all the way up, see the dream. And now there was an honest-to-goodness chance to touch the dream. So that just kind of fell into place. And so that it was more of a natural approach, but I got a little choked up only because, you know, I had coached so long, and I knew this was probably going to be my last year. And one of the things that I always dreamed about myself was what would it be like to go to a Final Four.
You know, my big memory with the Purdue game is before, you know, Coach Bennett gave just an awesome pregame speech. You know, this was at that point in his career, this was his biggest game. And we had a theme that year called Touch the Dream. And, you know, he went back to that. And he's like, here we are, guys. We're on the verge of going to the Final Four. And it was an emotional speech. And it really got us fired up.
Now, I don't know if any of the guys talked about the dream and how we would have a theme every year regarding the dream, reach for the dream and touch the dream, that sort of thing. Every year we would have a motto, and the dream for Coach Bennett was getting to the Final Four. And it always even struck me a little bit as odd because I thought, well, shouldn't the dream be to win a national championship? But the way Coach would talk about it was once you get to the Final Four, you've done something special that so few people have done, and anybody can win. You get down to four teams, anybody can win those two games. But you got to get there first. So that was always his goal. In fact, I still have, even sitting in my office, I'm looking at it right now, from our recruiting visits, they would host us for our official visit, and you get a hotel room, and they would plaster the walls with these pictures and fake articles. So someone on their, you know, some intern on their staff or student would write a fake article, and it was all about us going, for my visit and for our class's visit, it was all about us going to the Final Four in 2000 in Indianapolis. Which is one of those, like, you write down a goal, you're more likely to achieve it type of things. It's amazing to me. It gives you chills when you read the articles because, they would have, okay, we won the first round of game against this team and then that team. And sure enough, it's exactly what ended up happening. And so his pregame speech, just to bring full circle, was all about, you guys got us here. I mean, it was like an I'm proud moment. It was an emotional moment. I think Coach got choked up while he did it and just sort of, as a coach, you always kind of want to hold your team to a standard, and you never quite feel like they're living up to what you want them to do. You know, you're never satisfied. Any good coach is never truly satisfied. And he kind of had, for the first time, a moment of, you know what, you guys are good. You can do this. You got to this point. You're capable of winning, and I couldn't be prouder. And go out there and show them what you got type of a speech. So it was a different message than we'd ever really heard, and coach didn't get emotional like that. So we went out there and kind of played with that passion behind us.
Really setting the tone early on. John Bryant hitting some big threes in the first half, which gave us some immediate confidence. And then, you know, the rest of the game just tried to play solid defense. We think we did a good job. You know, Brian Cardinal was their best player, and I think he scored some points, but for the most part, he was contained. And Mike did a great job playing defense on Jerron Cornell. We you know, got good minutes from everybody that game. I know Roy Boone had a good game.
I still laugh when I tell the story. We fill out brackets. Well, we did at the time. We would fill out NCAA brackets as players. You're probably not supposed to do that, but we did anyway. I did. And I actually picked us shockingly, I picked us to go to the Elite Eight and play Purdue, but I had Purdue beating us. Why I did that, I have no idea why I did that, but I remember having this fear going, if this happens, will it sort of be like mentally my mind was there and we couldn't beat them, or if I have a bad game, will it be because, you know, I never thought we could get to the Final Four anyway. So I know all those are the baseball superstitious side of me was very worried about it. And I certainly would have carried it to my grave had we lost to them. I wouldn't have told anybody, but I can tell this story now, but it was good. It was a dogfight. The game was everything I thought it would be. It was tight the whole game. They battled. It was tough. You know, it was in the altitude, both teams going at it. And ultimately, we get just a few more points than they did.
It really felt, when the buzzer went off, like we had to look up, and it didn't hit us until that buzzer went off. It was a four-point game, if I recall, and it was that last possession. We played it as if it was a tied game because we were so consumed into that game. Most teams would be playing a little conservative and guarding against the three and trying not to foul. I was on that floor. I just remembered not even really being recognizing of the time and the score because we just knew we had to get a stop. And so when that buzzer went off, there was that moment where he thought, oh, wait, is this really over? And then the celebration began.
Straight away. It's a Brett loose ball. Lord, that's it. After 59 years, the Badgers are headed back to the Final Four.
That game was the most intense game I've been a part of as far as just a physical, emotional game. You had two coaches that really wanted to be a part of that Final Four. You had two upper-class type teams, and it was the fourth time we played each other. And so I think that all tied into that kind of an ending. You know, we really celebrated each win. And at a more of a emotional pitch than other teams that have made a Final Four at that point, because you just, you know, the Arizona game, even that first game against Fresno State was a loaded team talent-wise. And it was just, you know, each of those games, it was such a tremendous feeling. And then a couple of those, just two things. One was Coach Bennett's speech prior to the Purdue game. It was just one of those moments where I don't even know if I could really recall what he said, but just that feeling. It was almost that feeling we were going to be too hyped up and too emotionally charged to play, but we did it was such a great speech, and to see him have that moment. And then the fans in Wisconsin. That year was pretty special. And again, my memory, I believe we had the Rose Bowl women's NIT, the hockey team was ranked number one, so there was a lot of success in that time. And I've always appreciated Wisconsin fans, and that, you know, for the basketball program to have that level of success, and then to see what has happened since then, that is one thing that I've always taken great pride in is that Wisconsin fans get to see that kind of success, and they deserve it because they backed very emotionally and very. Lended a lot of support to teams prior to, and to see them enjoy the success has been outstanding.
From that weekend, first of all, us making the Final Four, you know, that was that just the energy from that was insane. And us, after we beat Purdue, we actually had a ton of fun in the locker room. And just in that moment, just a lot of fantastic memories, great energy. Even getting back on campus, the coaches were telling us, like, you guys do not need to be out. Make sure you're in your rooms, at your apartments, things like that. We don't want to see you out. And all the players are like, skip that. We will never do this again. Like, it kind of sucked as we were in, you know, doing all the media stuff. And we would catch the news and see what Madison looked like, and Madison was rocking, and we're stuck in, you know, in Albuquerque, and, you know, it's like the fans enjoyed it. They were allowed to enjoy it more than we were able to. So that kind of, we were kind of like, ah, shoot, we got to get back there.
But all of a sudden you're going, wow, I'm celebrating like these guys I've watched celebrate before. And you, And it's surreal. It's a weird, weird moment that all of a sudden you're in this dream that you only felt other people got to do stuff like that. And so we just soaked it in. And I do remember trying to relive a Khalid El-Amin moment. I remember him running and jumping on the scores table and kind of pumping his fist. So Mark Vershaw and I ran over to not the scores table, but like the media table. And I jumped up on it, and it was more like a folding table. It wasn't a strong table, and it collapsed, and the poor computers. I don't know if it was Mark Stewart or who was there, but there was some definite computer damage at the time. It came down immediately, and so we didn't show a lot of compassion, and we just kind of danced away. And so I don't really know what the fallout was of that, but it wasn't good for from poor media folks.
Mike Kelly and Andy Kowski were both named to the West All-Region team, and John Bryant, as we mentioned, named Most Outstanding Player. So, John, got to know where you keep this Most Outstanding Player award you received back in 2000.
Yeah, I didn't even get a certificate for that, at this point, it doesn't matter. It was a little surprising at the time. I figured the NCAA would do something for that. But, it was such a team thing, I didn't really care. It's just funny when people ask me that question. The MOP of the West region was, I think, partly just because I was the guy that kind of got hot and made some shots. But there were certainly guys that were really valuable in each game. Maybe it was me in the Fresno game, but we had other guys in the Arizona game and the LSU. I mean, what our post players did in the LSU game to take away, two extremely talented, physical big men for LSU and Stromile Swift and Jabari Smith. Those two were very, very good. And the way that our post players dominated them in that LSU game, a number of guys could have been and were very deserving of, the award that I got.
The Badgers returned home to an adoring fan base in Madison. Camp Randall Stadium was the site of a pretty huge pep rally after the Badgers trekked home along East Washington Avenue. Here's Maurice Linton recalling one memory from that occasion.
One fantastic story that I always kind of rethink, and it hits me every so often, and Mike probably will hate me saying this, but we had the pep rally at Camp Randall after, and this was some bucket list stuff. And, the coaches, as we're arriving, we're driving up on the bus, the coaches are giving us the plans and who's going to speak and, how long we can say whatever and, don't embarrass the pro, all that. So, everybody's kind of like thinking about what they're going to say and, wisely, the coaches didn't give me an opportunity to speak, because I probably would have said something I regret. We're talking to Mike, and Mike's like, holy cow, what do I say? And Mike, yeah, I can tell you, Mike Kelly, all of us were humble guys, but Mike Kelly, he probably out of all of us deserved to, have a little bit of swag, I guess, so to speak. But, he was just a humble guy, and, he's not the guy to stand up in front of a group of, at least not then, a crowd and acknowledge the crowd. He's just a humble guy. And he's like, what do I say? And I don't know if you recall back then, I don't know if it was Bud Light or Miller Light, hopefully due to Wisconsin, hopefully it was Miller Light. It was the WhatsApp, promotion that they were running. So I was like, Mike, just say that, and he's like, that's actually not a bad idea. So we get up there to the podium, and you guys probably have the film on that. We get up to the podium, and everyone says some stuff, and Mike, he's like a media darling, and, people are like screaming when he grabs the mic, and, we shush the crowd, and he just says, like, "Wise up," and the crowd, like, goes insane. It goes insane, and that was a cool moment that I think I'll always remember.
Coming back from Purdue, had the awesome pep rally over at Camp Randall. Probably 20,000 people were there. I remember the bus ride, coming out from the Kohl Center to the airport and fans, lining East Washington Avenue. And, Roy Boone went to Madison East High School, which is on that route. So the entire high school was out in front of the high school with signs. And it was cool. It was cool. You know, Badger fans are awesome. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I went to Wisconsin is that growing up in Wisconsin, you end up loving the Wisconsin Badgers and being a Badger fan and knowing other Badger fans. The practices were more brutal during the NCAA tournament than they were all year. Like, we really practiced hard, and we knew we had to be prepared for these games. And we practiced hard for Michigan State. They say it's hard to beat a team three times. Well, this is the fourth time we were playing them, and we hadn't beaten them in the previous three games that year. We lost both regular season games and semis of the Big Ten tournament. So there's a lot going on. You got to try to stay focused. And, you know, going back, I wish I would have, you know, let it soak in a little bit, but you're so focused on the game and preparing that, you know, it's hard to really enjoy that week.
It's not my most pleasant time now, only because I feel like I could have personally done a better job. We were able to work in the time we had, do the interviews, do all that stuff. These were very level-headed, very bright young men. But having to play Michigan State for the fourth time, I knew we had to be able to do something to score enough because they were really a good team. They were as good as we were at what we did, and they were able to do other things. And I think we needed to do a little more. And I just didn't come up with something new, something different. And that, I guess that bothers me to this day, but not so much anymore. But I remember laying awake after many nights after that thinking, what could I have done differently?
Wisconsin now prepared for a much shorter trip. Instead of going out west, they were just going to Indianapolis for the Final Four that season, facing off with Michigan State in the national semifinal. As we mentioned, they'd met three previous times that year. Michigan State had won all three battles, twice in the regular season and once in the Big Ten tournament. They were led by three truly outstanding players, Mateen Cleaves, Morris Peterson, and Charlie Bell, all three of whom wound up playing in the NBA. But despite that, Badgers were close at halftime. It was 19-17 Michigan State at the break. It was the picture of low-scoring Wisconsin basketball. But the Spartans started the second half on a 13-2 run and ultimately pulled away. Michigan State would end up winning the national championship two nights later against Florida, 89-76. They finished the year 32-7 and won the national championship. Roy Boone had 16 points for Wisconsin in that game against the Spartans, but no other Badger player reached double figures. Here's Mark Vershaw talking about that very tough Michigan State squad.
What I thought Michigan State did against us was that they still tried to run and do their things, but they didn't play outside of themselves. They didn't get rattled with the pace. They just stood and fought and said, let's see how many play, you know, who can get the most buckets. And Morris Peterson's stretch in the second half made that into a game that then we had to try to do some things to catch up. And he was the difference. You know, like I said, him and Michael Redd, those type of players, it was hard for us to guard. And but that was tough. That was a team that it was hard to say that we were as good as them when they beat us four times.
Yeah, they were just clearly the best team in the country. They could play fast. They could play slow. They could tell you what they were going to do, and they were going to do it anyway. I mean, I think people realize, especially Milwaukee, how good Charlie Bell was. But at the time, he was a complimentary player for them. I mean, it was all about Mateen Cleaves and Morris Peterson. And then they had, I can't think of it, Andre Hudson inside and a few other guys. But Charlie Bell was just like the silent assassin on that team. I mean, they ran. They played really fast. He would run the wing. He made just about every shot he put up. So he's, you know, their third or fourth option. And he goes on to have a 10-year NBA career, whatever he had. So they were just tough. We knew it. After we beat LSU, at Purdue, excuse me, we went back to the hotel, and I remember with Andy in our room as we're showering up and getting ready to get on the plane, watching their game, and they were playing Iowa State to get to the Final Four. And if you remember, Iowa State had Marcus Fizer, who was just an animal. I mean, he was an incredible player. And Jamal Tinsley was their point guard. Yeah, Jamal Tinsley was like, I mean, at any moment he could embarrass you. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to guard Tinsley if they win, and Andy's going to have to guard Fizer. And both of us didn't care. We were still cheering for Iowa State because we knew if we have to play Michigan State, I mean, it's just, they were that good. It was going to take the perfect game to beat them. And in our minds, we actually played the perfect half. I mean, we went in with a 2-point game at half. I know everybody moans and groans about the score, but that was about the only way we could hang with them. We had to grind it out and make it a tough game. And 20 minutes, we did our job, and then the second 20 minutes, it just got away from us.
They have our number. I don't know what our record was, but I know my tenure there against Michigan State, we won one game. And, you know, we were happy to be on the national stage, but, again, we were thinking to ourselves, like, you know, we can't lose this game because, quite honestly, a lot of us on the team felt that if we can get past Michigan State, we can sneak up on Florida and North Carolina. That's what we felt. That's what we felt. But, again, there's no sneaking up on Michigan State.
A Wisconsin team
they were a great
just
team.
Can't quite express how much they achieved in the month of March. Took the floor as the first team ever to make it to the Final Four is with 13 losses. North Carolina will soon join them. They're 13 losses. They play next. A team that didn't have a first team All Big Ten, second team All Big Ten, third team All Big Ten. Didn't even have a player that merited honorable mention. But talk about honor and pride. That's what they showed us in this year's tournament.
Well, a run against Fresno State, Arizona, LSU, and Purdue to get here. A good stretch.
One thing you may not remember about the 99-2000 team is that the majority of the contributors were juniors and due back in 2000 and 2001. John Bryant and Dwayne Dewaney were graduating, but all the other key contributors were due back. And that team did okay. They finished a game better in the Big Ten standings than they had the year before, 18-11 overall. But that season ended with a little bit of a thud. Lefty Driesell, the famous Maryland coach, was coaching Georgia State that year, and Georgia State pulled the first round upset over the Badgers and made Wisconsin an early exit. Dick Bennett had actually left early in that 2000-2001 season after just three games, stepping down as head coach. Initially, he had intended to step down after the 2000 season, but wanted to stay on after their Final Four run, and he wound up giving the job over to his assistant, Brad Soderberg. A lot of fans remember that, will remember it as Dick Bennett trying to set up Soderberg to keep the job long term, and asked Dick Bennett about that. He said it was a little more complicated than that, his decision to step down.
Well, I had planned to leave. I was, without going into any detail, I was a little worried about my own emotional state. I was kind of losing my temper, and you know, the thing that I've always advised coaches, guys who want to go into it, you know, it's not wrong to be an assistant for a while. I had, through all of my years, my 11 high school years and all of the college, I had I'd always been a head coach, and I never, and I didn't have a lot of assistants, so I was doing everything. And I think I might have had a little longer stay if I had been an assistant, because you don't internalize everything as an assistant. And I did. I mean, I was pretty much always the same kind of coach, but I didn't handle as well as I got older. You know, when you're young, you just kind of let things kind of bounce off. But as I got older, I internalized things a little more, and it was really bothering me. And that's why I thought I would probably step aside. But the excitement of the Final Four and having, you know, most of the team back, and I got caught up in it. And the summer between the Final Four and the start of the next season, there was no break because we went to Italy. We had arranged to go to Italy, and we had all of our camps in June. The spring was, you know, one speaking engagement, rallying point, after another. It was a busy spring after the Final Four, and then the summer was our own camps. July was a lot of recruiting. You're on the road all of July, and then August was 11 days of preparation and then 2 weeks in Italy, and we got back as classes started, so there was no real off season, and I was really tired, come September. and right away you're into it again. And so I realized early in that season that, you know, I was done emotionally. I really was, and I was not handling it particularly well. You know, I've been criticized for walking away, but I think had I stayed, it would have been worse for everybody. And there was no intention to leave then. And people say, well, you just wanted Brad Soderberg to have the job. Well, I did, but that isn't why I left then. It was a very personal, maybe selfish thing. I just didn't think I could handle it anymore and be fair to that team. And I wanted them to have a chance to be good.
That year was different. We had the taste of what the expectations were going to be like. We had, you know, coach leaving early in the year after our Big Ten ACC game, which was a shock to all of us players. But all that said, I mean, it was a successful year. We did well. We probably did similarly to how our previous year had been. And then we just had a matchup there in the tournament with Lefty Driesell coaching that Georgia State team and, you know, missing some free throws and just a couple balls bouncing not your way. I think it was a 6-11 matchup, you know, which those are upsets waiting to happen, and it certainly happened.
Nearly two decades have transpired since that 2000 team made the improbable run to the Final Four, and they've left a pretty impressive legacy. The program is in a much different position than it was then. Back then, that was only Wisconsin's sixth appearance in the modern NCAA tournament. And in 2018, the Badgers lost a streak of 19 consecutive years of going to the Big Dance. The 2000 team was the second year of that long run. And now this year, the Badgers are back in position to get into the tournament, or at least be in the conversation. They've appeared in the national rankings. The Wisconsin program is no longer a team that's surprising people if they work deep into the NCAA tournament. Of course, they went to the Final Four in both 2014 and 2015, reaching the national championship game and falling to Duke in the latter of those 2 years. So the 99-2000 team did it a little differently than the modern teams do, but certainly blazed a trail, at least spiritually, for what was to follow for Wisconsin basketball.
I'm not trying to take anything away from any of our guys, but you know, I was a Division II player out of high school, and you know, I could have gone to small Division I, but at the end of the day, I was a Division II player. A lot of our guys weren't highly recruited. There were times we would struggle to score, and you know, it could look ugly. And we would be. I mean, I think to a guy, if you asked everybody on our team that was on that team, we would all admit that. You know, we weren't flashy. We weren't. Obviously, it wasn't pretty at times, but you know, we did what we did. We did it well, and we did it to the best of our ability. And I think we probably, you know, accomplished as much as we could ever have accomplished. We probably played to a level that, you know, was as high as we could play, if not exceeding what we thought we could play at. And that's rare, I think, for teams. You know, usually teams underachieve for one reason or another, and I think we certainly overachieved.
And I used to say, you have to recruit players initially whom you can lose with, which meant you probably would lose in those first few years, but they would stay with you and learn and improve. So not only did I need to find players who could play, but were willing to face the difficulties of losing and would stay together, develop as a kind of a core unit. So I always tried to recruit a large number of players in my first real recruiting class. And I was able to do that at all of the schools, the colleges that I coached at, and particularly at Wisconsin. And they did stay together through it all.
Special thanks to Wisconsin coach Dick Bennett and all the players from the 99-2000 basketball team who sat down to chat for this segment, for this podcast. You can read the oral history of the Wisconsin Badgers 99-2000 Final Four team at jsonline.com, including full audio clips from every one of the interviews you heard here. Audio in full, about 15 to 18 minutes with each guy, each member of the team.
and had a lot of fun putting that together. Also, a ton of pictures from the 99-2000 run. Again, find that at jsonline.com. Thanks to Turner Broadcasting. Borrowed some of their audio clips from the games in 2000. And thanks to you for listening. Appreciate it, and join us again soon. We'll have another episode of the Wisconsin Badgers podcast coming at you in due time. In the meantime, enjoy March Madness.